Madam President, Excellencies, Honorable Ministers, Ambassadors, distinguished delegates, friends and colleagues in UN and in public health, ladies and gentlemen, I thank Member States for the trust shown when you appointed me as your Director General more than 10 years ago. I promised to work tirelessly and have done so, but never got tired of the job in the best and worst of times. When I took office, I also promised that I would hold myself accountable for the organization's performance. This month, I have issued a report tracking how the public health evolved during the 10 years of my administration. The report sets out the facts and assesses the trends, but makes no effort to promote my administration. The report goes some way towards dispelling criticism that WHO has lost its relevance. The facts tell a different story. The report covers setbacks as well as successes and some landmark events. Above all, it is a tribute to the power of partnerships and the capacity of public health to take solutions found for one problem and apply them to others. As just one example, it took nearly a decade, 10 years, to get the prices for antiretroviral treatments for HIV down. In contrast, because of our teamwork, because of our collective efforts, prices for the new drugs that cure hepatitis C plummeted within 2 years. This is the culture of evidence-based learning that improves efficiency, gives public health efforts their remarkable resilience, and keeps us very optimistic. Yes, we falter sometimes, but we never give up. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, as I speak to you, the political and economic outlook is much less optimistic than it was when I took office in 2007. That was before the 2008 financial crisis changed the economic outlook from prosperity to austerity almost overnight, with effects on economies and health budgets that are still being felt. That was before acts of international terrorism and violent extremists became commonplace, before the word, and let me quote, mega disaster entered the humanitarian vocabulary, before seemingly endless armed conflicts caused the largest population displacements and flights of refugees seen since the end of the Second World War. That was before the alarming frequency of attacks on health facilities and aid convoys make a mockery of the international humanitarian law. We condemn all these attacks on healthcare facilities and healthcare workers and aid workers. According to reports consolidated by WHO, more than 300 attacks on healthcare facilities occur in 2016 in 20 countries, with the majority documented in the Syrian Arab Republic. We are also seeing how a world full of threats can toss out deadly combinations, like the dual threats from drought and armed conflict that have brought famine to parts of Africa and the Middle East on a scale never experienced since the United Nations was founded in 1945. The world was fortunate that the 2009 influenza was so mild. The world is fortunate that the new viruses that emerged to cause MERS in 2012 and human cases of H7N9 avian influenza in 2013 are not yet spreading easily from person to person. But we have to be vigilant. We cannot let our guard down because they have the potential to do so. The world was less fortunate with Zika, an outbreak that WHO continues to monitor closely. The world was not at all fortunate with the 2014 Ebola outbreak that utterly devastated the populations of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. This was West Africa's first experience with Ebola, and the outbreak took everyone, including WHO, by surprise. WHO was too slow to recognize that the virus, during its first appearance in West Africa, would behave very differently than during past outbreaks in Central Africa, where the virus was rare but familiar and containment measures were well rehearsed. But WHO made quick course corrections, brought the three outbreaks under control through teamwork and partnerships, and gave the world its first Ebola vaccine that confers substantial protection. This happened on my watch, and I am personally accountable. I saw it as my duty, as your Director General, to do everything possible to ensure that a tragedy on this scale will not happen again. History will judge whether the new emergencies program has given the world a stronger level of protection. Ultimately, health systems with international health regulation core capacities must be strengthened in your countries to protect unexplained deaths much earlier. This is critical for improving global health security to protect our common vulnerability. Last week, ladies and gentlemen, the Democratic Republic of Congo confirmed a new Ebola outbreak near the border with the Central African Republic. This is the country's number 8 Ebola outbreak. In its last outbreak, which coincided with the West African outbreak, DRC interrupted transmission within 6 weeks. Despite enormous logistical challenges, discussions is ongoing with DRC about possible use of the new vaccine to augment the response. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa had a number of spillover effects, which can be judged more immediately. During the outbreak, WHO acquired extensive experience in facilitating R&D for new medical products, but poor coordination lost too much time. To speed things up, WHO and its partners finalized an R&D blueprint in 2016 by setting up collaborative models, standardized protocols for clinical trials, and pathways for accelerated regulatory approval in advance. The blueprint cut the time needed to develop and manufacture candidate products from years to months. The expert consultations that designed the blueprint led to the establishment of CEPI, which is the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, announced in January 2017 with initial funding of nearly $500 million. The coalition is building a new system to develop affordable vaccines for priority pathogens identified by WHO as a head start for responding to the next inevitable outbreak. The world is better prepared, but not nearly well enough. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the relevance of WHO's work is demonstrated in many ways, some more visible than others. The chronology of the HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria epidemics shows direct links between WHO changes in technical strategies and turning points in the disease situation. WHO also makes scientific breakthroughs more democratic by translating findings into a public health approach that works everywhere, even in extremely resource-constrained settings. Relevance is readily apparent when WHO endorses a new medical product and partners find ways to fund it, or when WHO issues a position paper on a new vaccine. Many national immunization programs will not introduce a new vaccine until WHO has issued its formal seal of approval. Such approval triggers action by Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, to scale up access dramatically. The pre-qualification program is now firmly established as a mechanism for ensuring that the safety, quality, and efficacy of low-cost generic products match those of originator products. For example, by the end of 2016, WHO has pre-qualified more than 250 finished pharmaceutical products for treating HIV-related conditions. This stretches the impact of funding agencies like the Global Fund in significant ways. The relevance of WHO was most dramatically demonstrated during last month's Global Partners Meeting on the Neglected Tropical Diseases. Participants assessed and celebrated 10 years of record-breaking progress that promises to eliminate many of these ancient diseases in the very near future. This is one of the most effective global partnerships, also with industry, in the modern history of public health. The fact that in 2015, nearly 1 billion people received free treatments that protect them from diseases that blind, maim, deform, and debilitate has very little impact, dare I say, on the world's geopolitical situation. These people, being protected with the generosity of all of you and with the efforts of partnership, are among the poorest in the world. But judging from the massive amount of media coverage, which included entry into the Guinness World Records for the most medication donated, this was a success story that the world was hungry to hear. Less visible relevance comes from the way WHO has built a safety net that encircles the world, the globe, in the form of thousands of laboratories specialized in the surveillance and diagnosis of priority pathogens, hundreds of collaborating centers, and a vast network of scientific boards and strategic advisory groups. I want to thank you, thank your scientific institutions for their valuable work and for their contribution to WHO. No other health agency has this degree of technical expertise ready to hand. Excellencies, the resolutions you adopt also shape the health situation, especially by raising the profile of neglected problems. For example, the Comprehensive Mental Health Action Plan, adopted in 2013, definitively took mental health out of the shadows and into the spotlight. Likewise, beginning in 2010, viral hepatitis appeared as a standalone agenda item at three sessions of the World Health Assembly, contributing greatly to the international priority now given to this disease. But the strongest call for action comes from the high-level political commitment. This happened in 2011, when the United Nations General Assembly adopted a political declaration on neglected, you know, truly neglected, chronic non-communicable diseases. And again in 2016, when a political declaration gave full attention to antimicrobial resistance. Both political declarations responded to a crisis in ways that trigger broad-based urgent action to find solutions. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I regard the 2010 World Health Report on Health Systems Financing, the Path to Universal Coverage, as the most influential publication issued during my administration. It launched what is now a movement towards universal health coverage and inspired the 2012 UN General Assembly resolution that paved the way for inclusion of UHC in the Sustainable Development Goals. Talking about SDG 2030 Development Agenda, our actions must be guided by the five P's: people, planet, peace, prosperity, and partnership. Ladies and gentlemen, the recommendations that I most want to see implemented are those made by the Commission on Ending Childhood Obesity. Childhood obesity is the most visible and arguably the most tragic expression of the forces that are driving the rise of non-communicable diseases. It is the warning signal that bad trouble in the form of more heart disease, cancer, and diabetes is on its way. The initiatives we all most want to succeed are those for the eradication of polio and Guinea worm disease. For both, the world has never been so close. We must keep up our efforts and bring eradication of both of these diseases to become a reality. The trend that most profoundly reshaped the mindset of public health was, of course, the rise of chronic non-communicable diseases. This shift in the disease burden called for a move away from the biomedical model of health and its emphasis on curing diseases to a much broader approach based on prevention. I regard every woman, every child as the most game-changing strategy during my administration. Its adoption by the UN in 2010 captured financial support in the billions of dollars and launched a number of initiatives aimed at implementing its recommendations. Maternal and child deaths dropped dramatically. The related WHO Commission on Information and Accountability for Women and Children's Health added greatly to the culture of measurement and accountability. As set out in this year's World Health Statistics Report, nearly half of all deaths worldwide now have a recorded cause of death. This is huge progress. And I thank all the countries that make a special effort in this front. Ladies and gentlemen, the most contentious issue was access to medicines, especially when intellectual property and the patent system were perceived as barriers to both affordable prices and the development of new products for diseases of the poor. The negotiations that led to the establishment of the pandemic influenza preparedness framework were tense, to say the least, but ultimately successful, as were those that led to the global strategy and plan of action on public health, innovation, and intellectual property. Fortunately, several new initiatives and public-private partnerships are contributing to both objectives. One example is a new global antibiotic research and development partnership launched last year by WHO and the Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative, in short, DNDi. This is a needs-driven R&D initiative, initially focused on the development of new antibiotics for treating sepsis and sexually transmitted infections, most notably gonorrhea. The partnership aims to promote access and to ensure prices are affordable. Earlier this month, WHO launched a very important pilot project for pre-qualifying biosimilar medicines, a step towards making expensive cancer treatments more widely available. WHO is also working with partners on a model for the fair pricing of pharmaceuticals. The rationale is obvious. Universal health coverage depends on affordable medicines. No countries on this planet can treat their way out of all the diseases that are affecting your people. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I will conclude with some brief advice that you may wish to consider as you continue to shape the future of this organization. WHO stands for fairness. Continue to make reductions in inequalities a guiding ethical principle. What gets measured gets done. Continue to strengthen health systems for civil registration and vital statistics, and continue to make accountability frameworks an integral part of global health strategies. Scientific evidence is the bedrock of policy. Protect it. No one knows whether evidence will retain its persuasive power in what many now describe as a post-truth world. Vaccine refusals are at least one reason why the tremendous potential of vaccines is not yet fully realized. The current measles outbreaks in Europe and North America should never have happened, and it has spread to many other countries. Another advice, push for innovation. Meeting the ambitious health targets in the Sustainable Development Goals depends on innovation. Innovation that uses country experiences can be frugal and transformative. For example, the R&D partnership that gave Africa its meningitis A vaccine has transformed the lives of millions of people. Safeguard WHO's integrity in all stakeholder engagements. The framework for engagement with non-state actors is a prime instrument for doing so. And I was told many other UN agencies are following WHO's example to find ways to engage non-state actors. Yes, ministers of health are our principal partners, and we value that. But the multiple determinants of health demand engagement with non-health sectors, with communities, with partners, with businesses, with civil society organizations. Last but not the least, maybe two more points. Listen to civil society. Civil society organizations are society's conscience. They are best placed to hold governments and businesses like the tobacco, food, and alcohol industries accountable. They are the ones who can give the people who suffer the most a face and a voice. Above all, the most important advice coming from an outgoing DG is remember the people. Behind every number is a person. who defines our common humanity and deserves our compassion, especially when suffering or premature death can be prevented. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, this is the last time I will address the World Health Assembly. I thank you, member states, all your institutions in your country, for the privilege and the honor of serving this organization. I have done so with humility, but also with great pride. I thank my regional directors for their wise counsel and their support for the WHO reform, among others, and my wonderful staff at headquarters, in the regional offices, and in countries where the impact of our work matters most. Last but not least, I thank my husband. And my family for their love and support. I finish by saying, David, thank you for listening. David is my husband. Once again, thank you for giving me the privilege and the honor to serve you and your people. Thank you.